Thank you for taking time to listen to today's episode. As I'm sure you know, the current crisis in Myanmar is extremely concerning, and we appreciate that you're taking the time to stay informed. There's even value in just becoming a little more aware and helping to inform others. So we would like to encourage you to please consider sharing this episode so that more people may learn about what is really happening in the country now. It's just absolutely critical to ensure that this issue remains present in public discourse everywhere. But now, let's get on to the interview itself.
Welcome back to Inside Myanmar Podcast. My name is Prangnam. I'm your host today. Our guest today is Kara, an actor and public figure from Myanmar who's been living in exile since the military coup of 2021 due to his outspoken support for the pro-democracy movement. Kara, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you, Brenna, for an introduction. And it's very pleased to meet you. Finally meet you. it's been a while with being, you know, setting up this podcast. I got to meet you now. So yeah, let's start the show.
Yeah, you've been busy as well, right? You've been running around. What have you been busy with lately?
Yeah, I've been working on like a short film. You know, I had some student who has been studying in UCLA in LA, and they connected me and they're trying to make like a short film for that student project. They asked me about it. Yeah, they request me about it. So I'm happy to help. So I help out.
And you were acting?
And lately, I got to act, which is lovely. I love acting and stuff. I haven't really, this is like after 4.5, like closely to 5 years, you know, after the coup.
Yeah.
And after the COVID, this is kind of like my first short film that I got a chance to do it.
I see.
So another thing is like I was in San Francisco last week, and it's a fundraising event. The title is the Distant Cafe. A Distant Cafe. It's a lot of celebrities and artists and singers, and you know, kind of like 15 singers and celebrities. Exile artists who are together in this show. So we raised like over 90,000 US dollars.
Wow.
So which is really successful. I could say, you know, a successful event, a fundraising event.
Right.
So yeah, I can, yeah, it's been all over.
Good to finally get the chance to sit down with you. And so thank you so much for giving the time. I think for most of us in Myanmar, you know, in at least recently, it seems like our life is like divided into like before the coup and after the coup. And it has so much impact on our life. You know, before we get into your, you know, involvement in politics and your life in exile, I want to go back to, you know, when you were younger. I know you grew up in Mogo, which is also kind of known as like the land of rubies. And like maybe most of the international audience might not know where Mogo is and what Mogo is like. So can you tell us like a little bit about the home, your hometown? Like what is it like growing up there?
Yeah, my hometown, which is called Mogo, and then it's also called the Ruby Land because is where the ruby comes from. It is to the, you know, when you look at the map of the whole picture of Myanmar, then, and it's probably to the northeast of our country is like upper Burma, like very closely to the middle, but to the north and east, like a northeast kind of location,
right?
And close to the Yunlin too as well, it's kind of like, you know, our town, small town. The population is around like 100,000 in small, like a, you could say like a village, but we have divided into like two, east and west. So east Mogo is kind of like is more developed than west. So I grew up in west, in like 15 years all my childhood. And, you know, the town itself is surrounded by mountains.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a walk, you know, like a Chinese fry pan walk. So it's like a valley and surrounded by a mountain. So whenever you wake up in the morning and on the mountain, they were like releasing some, playing some, you know, Buddhist, like chanting, religiously, you know, we playing like that. So when you wake up in the morning, you could hear like people chanting, and then you wake up peacefully. You know, it's kind of like that. I grew up kind of like that. So very peaceful, and people are very content with their life. You know,
I see.
And very peaceful. So my family, they do a ruby business, like a jewelry business, like they trade gems because all the people in Mogo, especially people in Mogo who live for a long time, who grew up there, they grew up doing like a trading, like a ruby and gems trading. You know, you could easily get a lot of like beautiful, elegant gems easily, and it's very cheap there. But foreigners are not allowed to go into, which is like prohibited for foreigners, because it is land of ruby.
Yeah.
And yeah, but you gotta have a local, you know, guide to guide like tourist guide to let you in and things like that. It's very restricted. My childhood is very peaceful, I would say. And you know, when you grew up in 1890s, and you kind of have a, like a, you didn't grow up with phone and internet and things like that. So you basically like I basically grew up with nature. So I play, like, you know, whenever I got out from the school, and I'll go play with my friends and just going around. We don't use phone, things like that, you know, we just play on the ground.
Yeah.
I play basketball, football, any kind of sport outside, you know, activities and stuff. And, you know, we kind of have an effect of the military rules. We didn't get enough like electricity. You know, when we get electricity, we kind of very happy. You know, when I was a kid, when we have electricity, we kind of like shout out to the world. Like,
everybody cheers.
Everybody cheers. So happy to get even electricity. But we're okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, and our road is kind of roughy. You know, they had a plan. They had a plan like to make the road really good, like to repair it and things like that, you know, to make it better. But they postpone it all the time. And then they just like, I don't know, like they, you know, the road and everything are really rough and not really good.
Yeah.
Like the bed, because of, I don't know, they're not interested in, you know, developing, like development of our village. They just want to get all the good things, like the gems from my village, something like that. You know, I always have a thought of the military, they never treated us really like in a good way. You know, they just want to take everything from us.
Yeah, they probably pocketed the road construction money for themselves.
Yeah, I know. They just like put all the rocks like on the street. No, like beside the street. Yeah. It takes a long time. Even the trees, like bushes, like started to grow from the rocks.
Yeah, I think I've seen my share of those, just like rope, you know, rock piles on the road without anybody working on them.
That's right, like little piles. Yeah, just sit there and and for a long time. Yeah. So 15 years in Mogo, and I moved out to Yangon to like, I don't know, just to, because my family worried about me getting, you know, like married early in my age, in the early age. They kind of worried about me. I don't know why, you know, they don't want me to marry young. Because
I see.
I might not, you know, able to handle the marriage, and probably at the point.
I mean, fair enough. Because like people who grow up in like, you know, countryside, let's say, you know, less developed part of the country, you know, the kids, they usually end up getting married in their teens, right?
Right.
16, 17, 18, they're already married, right?
Right, right. My mom gave birth like on her 16. Yeah, it's pretty young. So they don't want me to get married young. No problem.
They don't want you to repeat the same mistake.
It's not like a mistake, but, you know, I think, you know, in a good way, I could say now, you know, the more I get older, the more I get mature enough, you know, to really think about what life, you know, I want to build, you know, something like that. What kind
right.
of life? Yeah, it's good to take time, but taking too long is not. It's not. It's running out of time.
Are you getting pressure from your mom now to get married now?
A little bit, but you know, I told her it's not a situation. You know, it's not a good condition to get married to someone. It's very complicated. I can't.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like you had a very quiet and kind of like enjoyable childhood growing up in Mogo. And like, what was it like moving to Yangon and like changing, you know, your friends, you know, and yeah, coming to a big city, you know?
Yeah, I feel like when I move out, I feel like the same feeling that I get after I came here as a refugee, you know, to the US. You know, when I was in New York for the first year, I first came here in the US, and I feel like I don't belong here, you know. I feel like I am nobody here, and I have to adjust everything, like adapt really quick, and even talking to the people, even culture, like a cultural shock. When I move out to Yangon, it's something like that too. I don't feel like I belong there. I don't have any friend there. So I went to get some classes, like English classes and like computer classes, like Photoshop, you know. I didn't know what to do at the time, at the point.
Yeah.
Like my family just want me to study. I study more, you know, taking classes, like whatever necessary for me in the future. So I'm taking.
Did your whole family move to Yangon, or was it just you?
Yeah, it's just everyone moved out because of me. Yeah,
I see. So your whole family kind of uprooted and moved to Yangon.
Yeah, right. But yeah, my mom is. My mom, after my dad passed away, my mom married another man, and she moved out. So I haven't really seen her for a long time. I mean, until now, and maybe around 15 years now, I haven't really had a contact with her. She lived in.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So yeah, basically, I grew up with myself. You know, like I don't have any siblings, so you know, I grew up with, yeah, my relatives. Huh. Yeah.
I see. That's one way to really, you know, fasten your maturity, I guess, as a 15-year-old to be like kind of, you know, kind of be on your own.
Yeah.
So early in your life, really.
Yeah. Yeah. My family didn't put any pressure on me. Just want me to not, you know, not drinking, because my dad passed away by drinking. Well, they don't want me to repeat it again. As long as I don't smoke, I don't drink, like, you know, continue like added does. As long as I'm being a good boy, like, you know, stay okay with that. It's, you know, my childhood is kind of like, you know, after 15 years, it's kind of like it's easy peasy lifestyle, you know, like something like that. Not struggling like other people. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And at what point did you, you know, come to the idea that you want to go into like modeling and acting? Or was that a dream since you were young, or?
Yeah. Yeah. Funny thing is, before I moved out to Yangon, and I told my friend in Mogo, you know, I told him, hey man, I will not come back again in to Mogo if I couldn't be an artist or like actor, anything like that. I won't be back. I will not be back, you know.
I see.
and then I moved out to Yangon, and then after 3 years, I came back, and then I was nobody at the time, and he told me, "Well, hey man, you told me you won't come back, you know, if there's nothing." I'll prove it to you, you know, something like that. Next time I'll prove it to you. I told him, and then I go back again. I went back again to Yangon, and then I didn't have any clue to get into modeling and stuff. I dated a model. She's a model. But I never had a chance to really get into, like, have a connection with modeling and stuff, because my family they didn't really support me, but they didn't like reject or, you know, like rejecting me or anything like that. So me myself, I'm on my own. I have to decide it. So I didn't have a chance. And then later, I want to work, because, you know, it's been like 4 years in Yangon and nothing happened in my life. So I took a chance. Because I grew up, you know, learning Chinese and Chinese. So my friend introduced me to a job, like a Chinese, as a Chinese translator. So I took the job, like a fish company, you know, I don't know, like fish company. they go uh-huh. out to the sea to catch fish, something like that.
I see.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how to call it, but yeah. It's like a fish, like a company, a marine, something like, you know, like a company. So I had to like translate between the workers, like Burmese worker, and the company, the owner is Chinese. And then I, as a translator for a month, and then I've been looking for another job. So, you know, another opportunity came, and then I went there to like get some interview. That job needs to translate like Chinese, English, and Burmese, three languages. So okay, it challenged me in a way. I get more salary and stuff. So I told the boss, yeah, I'll do it. So I quit the first job, and then I wait like a month, and nothing. They didn't respond to me, so, uh-huh. so I keep working out, like I keep working out near my house, and then you know later, like some modeling contest, poster, they advertise at the gym, so my friend they saw it and they told me like, hey, let's go. They asked me to, you know, let's go together. We're gonna participate in the contest, and you have to come. I always wanted to do modeling, but I don't have any confidence. I don't have any money, you know, at the time. So we share the taxi fares, like 200 jets each. At the time, you know, the total cost is like 1,000. So five people, we share like 200. And then we went to the like casting, right? We went to a casting in Malang.
Right.
And then they chose us. So, short to the point, then we got chosen. And then on the competition that day, I won. I got like nobody no one got the award, but only me. I got like a second runner up, at the time, second runner up, and then another modeling contest, in 2013. That was in 2013, like January 28th. I still remember the date, and then later, like end of the year of 2023, and there's like another contest happened. It's called Mayhem 2013. So I got another like subtitle, not the main title, and I got a subtitle award. And then later in 2024, and I had to go to Hong Kong for the competition.
2014, you mean?
2014. And then later, okay. After the contest, I won like a second runner up and a lot of subtitles. Then I came back, and that was my first time, like my peak of like getting fame. And
I see. Time.
And then later people approach me with, you know, like movies and stuff. So then I got into the film industry in Myanmar.
Yeah. It sounds to me almost like a movie.
Yeah, right.
like you're just working as this translator guy and then saw this like contest at your gym and then just give it a shot and then you want something. And then, I mean, obviously it's a big deal. You still remember the dates and everything.
I do.
It must have been like quite a year, huh?
Yes. That was really a good year for me. You know, I always remember what I've been through, like what I have done, like all the challenges. That's why, you know, in life I decided whatever there's like a chance or a choice that I have to make, then I would, you know, if it's challenged me, I'll definitely do it, you know. Like the coup.
Like something that challenges you, just like take it on.
Yeah, like a military coup. You know.
Yeah.
It is a challenge. It is life transitional period. It is a life transitional moment, you know. It's life changing moments, you know.
Yeah. I think I still remember when your first movie Dimension came out. I remember like it being kind of around the same time when there were a lot of like new Myanmar directors are coming out. You know, Christina Key started making film, Tu Bain Zo Wu, one of the younger directors are coming out, you know, Go Na Ji, starting to make film. I feel like that was a really exciting time to be in the film industry when you first started making film. Can you tell us a little bit about like your experience with Dimension and maybe also like what was going on in the movie industry at the time?
And it's probably around 2018, 19, around that time, people start to like getting into like a film very seriously, and most of them are young, you know, filmmakers. Aka, you know, Gunai, yeah, it's been a long time for him, but yeah, so he is like, he's young, you know.
Yeah,
he's young. I would say, yeah, So that time, it's kind of like, I want to think about it now. We really want to create a revolutionary like movie, and we don't know what to do, but we are like looking for a good director to have a vision, you know, and who has a vision and who are really passionate about film and want to do something different. So we've been looking for it, and then we found the director of the Dimension. And then he showed me like some short film that he did. It's called Zoji, and it's really good. And then he used all the VFX and, you know, like visual effect, and it's really nice. It's really nice, like you know, jumping all around and here and there, like a supernatural stuff. And I really, I was interested. It really interested me, and I contacted with him, and we kind of like brainstormed about what he's gonna do and what we're gonna, you know, do. And then we came up with the idea of like a mercenary soldier and stuff. So the dimension and dimension, like we created this dimension, the movie. It is a sci-fi action movie. And I think it is the first sci-fi action movie in Myanmar, and then which got the Academy Award by the sound, you know, the sound design. We got
Sound Design
Academy. Yeah, we got
an
award in the Academy in Myanmar 2018, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal, because like it's like also showing that the academies are welcoming the new generation as well.
To
consider a film made by first time filmmaker,
and
sci-fi action, which is like a genre that has not been, you know, I imagine the Academy Board has probably never considered a film like that before, you know?
Yeah, they never considered. Probably this is the first time that they consider us like a young filmmakers, and they really cheer us, promote us, you know, to get into. That was really very peak, like a peak time in our career. We did another movie called like The Hunters. It's gangster movie. That was really fun to make like an action movie, you know, in Myanmar. Not a lot of people are taking risks at the time to make like something like that kind of genre, you know?
Right. Is action movies like something that you grew up with and something that you are very familiar with?
Yeah, I want to do something different. That's why, you know, I want to do something different, you know, than the traditional like rom-com, you know, movies. Because it's been like, I think it's commercially rom-com movies are the best for commercial, like make money stuff. But in order to have a good quality movies and something creative, you gotta go outside, think outside the box. But not a lot of people take risks to think outside the box. And also, you know, the art, the actors, you know, they don't want to give time to make money, to make a good movie, because they make money, a lot of money in a short time. And then they are like being so comfortable with that, and they don't want to go out. They don't want to take risks or, you know, create something different for the film, for the quality of the film, you know, like as a Myanmar movies, you know?
Yeah. I imagine like you have to go through a lot of like trainings and preparation to do like action movies.
Yeah,
and I understand when you say like, you know, the older generation actors are kind of comfortable in their, you know, acting like dramas and comedies, because then they don't really have to train for it. Right. So like traditionally from what I can remember, like Myanmar action movies are kind of silly in a way, because the stunts and their action sequences are not that exciting. I feel like Dimension, your first movie, was the, you know, one of the first movies where you can actually see that the actor has really committed into doing action and doing training, you know? Like now, even in the West, you know, John Wick, for example, like it's very arduous, kind of has to go through a lot of trainings to be in that kind of action movies.
Definitely. You have to like, in a pre-production, you have to like actors have to like really train to get into shape and to really be in the character. You know, how the character walks or even, you know, talk, like how he moves, you know, and the way he, you know, as a mercenary soldier, so you gotta be, you know, really good in fighting stuff. So I go to train like kickboxing stuff and taekwondo. you know, I consistently training after the movies, and after the movies. So I am now. I got a black belt in second degree in taekwondo.
Nice.
So I keep training, but no, not these days. But yeah, I used to train a lot when I was in Myanmar. I have my own personal trainer. My mentor, he is like my master. He is like a five degree, like five dan. So he's like the highest rank in Myanmar. He's one of the highest rank in Myanmar. So
it was
fun, you know, doing the kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. Yeah, we take like a month or two, like to prep, to do the action stuff. You know, we had to like go through all the scenes, in a fighting sequences. So we have to train scene by scene. So, and then the people from the production, like a DP and assistant director, they kind of like, they already seen the location and where, you know, how they're going to shoot it. So they told us, you know, they talked to, you know, to the choreographer, like a fighting choreographer, and they kind of like made some sequences, you know, regarding to the location that we're going to shoot. It takes a lot of time and I need to prep it in order to get good. But on set, you know, on that, you know, shooting day, everything, you know, turned out good. Sometimes it takes more time than we expected, because sunny, you know, Yangon is always sunny and it's very hot and very humid. So, you know, a lot of sweat. Yeah. you gotta drink a lot of water.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about like, you know, preparing for a movie and doing like pre-production, like for some of the audience who are probably like maybe familiar with how movies are made in the West, they probably think like, oh, that isn't that how all the movies are made? But like, they might not know that it's like an exception when it comes to Myanmar film industry, because, you know, I don't think the word like pre-production and like preparation exists in some of the movies and the quality, and you can see that in the qualities that comes out in a lot of the movies, right? So I think in the time, you know, 2017, 18, up until COVID, which kind of stall all the progress that was being made in Myanmar cinema, I think newer generations were doing a lot more pre-production and preparation and taking movie making very seriously.
Yes, because, you know, we are kind of like, we have a competition around, you know, like young generation filmmakers want to make some good movie, you know, and we have a, when there is a competition and, you know, people started to like do really good, started to like prep, do like pre-production really good, like they take time to do it, because, you know, when it come out, yeah, they want to be the best one. And so that was really a good like golden era for the cinema in Myanmar. That was a good time. I'm, you know, I kind of missed that time, that moment. We kind of like changing the rating system to like a censorship, and no, the censorship is really like bullshit. It is not really helpful to anyone, you know, in the film industry. You know why? Because you know, whatever you can use the name gangster, because people in the journalism and journalists, they kind of like put give the gangster, the name gangster to the military. So, so you can't use a gangster, the name, even name the gangster, you can't use it because, no, Yangon Mafia. You can't use the Yangon Mafia.
Oh.
The Yangon Mafia is kind of like,
I see.
Some journalists give it to the, some general, like, yeah, something like that. So you can use that kind of name. And then some,
I see.
Yeah. If it's so bloody, you can't use it. You can't shot it. Yeah. They would just switch. They would give you like advices, like some advices. They will not like giving suggestion. You know, they force you to do it. They force you to change, to do in their way, in the safe way or anything like that. And funny thing is that the Hunters movie is a gangster movie that we shot it. And then, you know, like as a gangster, you know, when you talk, you know, you kind of use like some bad word, like
right.
score, you know, like when you get angry, you say south, right? In Burmese, right. South is like, it's for fucking, freaking, whatever.
Yeah.
But we can't really use it. We can use south. Gangster, they kind of use that kind of word, you know, like very, when they were really get freaking, whatever. But yeah, the censorship, you can't use that kind of word, and then you can't really kiss, like mouth to mouth. You can't really show off, something like that. It's very restricted, so you can't really make very interesting movies, I would say.
Creative. What kind of gangster like not swear, right?
Yeah, right. Swearing, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I see.
Definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, and I feel like all that kind of, everything kind of came to a stop because of COVID.
Yeah.
What were you doing during COVID, and what was your experience like going through that?
Yeah, I feel like that was the end of the world. The COVID. I'd imagined okay, this is it, you know, this is it. We're experiencing the end of the world, and this is it, you know, we're all gonna die. Something like that. I lost hope. But yeah, I am in the first wave and I felt like that, you know, everything stopped and we can't really do anything. But later, in the second wave, and we kind of like, we can like a new, you know, applying a new normal lifestyle, and we wear a mask, and, you know, we test, every time we, before the shoot and everything, you know, like test kicked, you know, like, yeah, every time before the shoot, you have to like put something in your nose, you know.
Yeah, stick it up your nose.
Yeah, stick it up.
Not a pleasant experience.
Like back then, people didn't know that, you know. But now they would just test it, not too deep right now. But before, they had to like really go deep down, to get the you know, to get a test. I don't know.
Yeah.
They just go deep, and it's not a pleasant experience for me, you know. Now I was enough for everyone. Nobody's gonna like it, so we had to test it out like that. And then at the time I was in the set, for Labia season 2 for Canal Plus.
I see, TV series.
TV show. And yeah, and then after we done with the shoot, and then I got in second wave of COVID, I got a COVID, and I suffered for like 10 days without any smell and taste. Wow. You know, tasteless, smellless. And then and then on the third wave, before the third wave, I think there came a coup, Basically on COVID, like I was, it was okay. You know, it was okay. We live in like new normal lifestyle, and then work where like slowly getting, you know, getting better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. People started to get, you know, taking little by little, you know, to get back to normal life. Yeah, but after COVID sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. So you thought the world was ending with COVID and you lost all hope, and then the cool came.
Yeah, and then cool came. And then that is okay. Right now it's the end of the world. I mean, it's the end of part of me. Yeah, life change.
Where were you when, you know, when the coup happened on February 1st?
Yeah, I was in Yangon, like before the coup, you know, like January 31st or 31st, and I was laying down on a bed, you know, watching Believe You and show, you know, like their online show. Like the first time online show, and then we were like, yeah, we're like enjoying, and you know, we wish each other, like to my girlfriend, hey, let's wish together for, you know, better future and stuff, you know, because we planned it like to make some movies, like a lot of, yeah, we line up a lot of movies, you know, this year, you know, because after COVID, okay, we're gonna, you know, let's try hard, you know, to get to normal life and things like that. So we wish each other. But then, you know, in the morning, internet went off, and then we heard that there's a coup. There's a military coup, and I didn't know what to do. I'm just like, what? They can, you know, possibly do that, you know, in this era of, you know, like 21st century, and then what the heck is kind of, I don't know what to do. It's very, I don't know. I didn't have any idea to think of any kind of thoughts, you know?
Right. And I'm guessing you were too young for 1988.
Yeah, I was too young, and in 2007, it's kind of like I was in my 14, so I didn't know shit about anything. And then later, I was 27. Yeah, the coup happened, and I didn't know anything about it. I didn't follow any news, you know. I just live like a people who mostly live in Yangon, you know, just cared about
right.
me and my family, and that's it, you know, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Not about politics, not about anything around me. I just care about myself and my film and my movies and stuff.
Yeah. Then when did that change for you?
After the coup, I went out, you know, like on the 6th of February, I went out with Gonayi Matu and Annie Niladeng from 88, and then we went out protest, and then we took a picture. Like the first picture is like the first picture we shot with a poster. Yeah, I took a photo. The first photo is like we took it with a poster. That said, it's written like you can shot it. You can shoot it to our head, but you can never kill our heart or something like that, like, you know, energy stuff like that, you know, you can never kill our spirit or like energy or something like that, you know. And at the time I felt about it, you know, I felt something, this shit is real, you know. this is freaking real. This is not a dream. This is real. I am in a, you know, path. Probably I am on a path of like revolution, you know. It's happening. It is happening. Something like that came into my mind. And then we went out, like we walk around, like around Sulay Pagoda. And I saw a lot of people, like, you know, playing some music, like chanting. People take few, they came and take photos of me, you know, and then and then all the car like start honing each other, you know, do like three finger salute. One day after another, like I kept like going out like consecutively after the first day of like 6th February. So I keep going like 10 days, you know, and then later, in order to keep, you know, when you keep going, like doing the kind of stuff, and you kind of like understand what is happening, you know, what is really happening and what the people really want. And
right.
you can feel the pain, and you can feel all desire that people have, you know, all these years, and then the fear that they have, you know, the desire that they want to change, you know. And I don't know, I just like, I, you know, when you go out, you feel the energy, and then when you come home, you know, every time like 8 o'clock, you have to like bang the pot, right? Every night, 8 o'clock, you gotta bang the pot, and then all the energy. I think it's more like, I don't know, it's just like, okay, I want to do it, you know, I want to be part of it, I want to change. They can't really do to us, you know, we have the right, we people, you know, have the right to change, we have the right to get what we want, right? This is what we're supposed to, this is what they're supposed to do, right? So,
yeah.
So then, yeah. One day after another, we went out protest before they start shooting.
Yeah. I definitely get the sense of energy and the unity that the everybody on the street is feeling the same thing, and everyone around the country is asking for the same thing. It's kind of like very for me, sometimes even like quite emotional to even think to those days. And when you say, you know, honking cars, like people were so understanding of each other, because we, like when we were driving past each other, we always honk just to show that we are on the same side, kind of thing. I definitely sense that sense of like energy and unity during those early days of protests, for sure.
That's right.
Yeah. So you were going out pretty much every day.
Yeah, pretty much every day. And then until I can't really go out because they started shooting, you know, they started like firing with using real bullets. And
right.
And yeah. And yeah, after Miyatoze kind of got shot in the head, and yeah, so I'm stopped going out, but we still use our social media to get awareness for international communities, and then later, so mostly we focus on civil disobedient movement. We kind of like government services, the building, you know, all the buildings, like a train, rail.
Railway workers.
We want there to their buildings and to encourage them to stop working for the government, like for the military.
Right.
In order to stop, you know, the whole thing, the whole system, to stop it. So
right,
so we encourage them we went to Donghua, which is very far from the downtown, and we went mm-hmm. like Danlin for it. You know, Danlin is far, is another side of Yangon, and you have to like go across through a river, Yangon River.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, we went all over the places, you know, around Yangon, like all the government like buildings, and like where the government the workers lived, and
right.
Yeah.
And when did it become dangerous for you in terms of like, you know, threats of arrest? And I imagine you were issued a 505A.
Yeah.
And
that's right. Yeah. On April 4th, I guess 4th or 6th, I can remember, but yeah, it's around there. And before April, like, and March, and one of our celebrity, like Udo Ming, got arrested. And then before that, right. we got arrested, and then people shot, Miyato Dwenge got shot. And then he did a Facebook live video. Mm-hmm. and then later he got arrested, and then we were like, so I found out this is real, you know, this is real, they really serious about it, you know, they really serious that they kind of like seriously they could you could be like arrested, put you in a jail, you know, like you could possibly get a jail time. So I was so scared. And then after he got arrested, I put him in the jail, and I started planning to go out. My family wanted me to run, and I started to like going all over Rangoon, to hiding, you know, to hide different places, like all the relative houses, you know, like something like that, and all the friends.
How was it like? Were you not like going out? You just like stay inside
a room? Yeah, that's it. You can't really go out from that room. You can't really go out inside the house, you know. You can't really be seen by a neighbor. It's very dangerous, that, you know, because my movies at the time, my TV show released before the coup, and then it was popular at the time, so people can recognize me easily. And then
right.
my skin color and my height is not very, you know, common.
It's not easy to hide you.
Yeah, it's not easy to hide, to get high, you know, to be hidden. So it's really hard for me to, you know, not going out of a room, you know, because I'm super, super active, and I always want to train, you know, like go to the gym all the time, like training every day. So, you know, I'm it's really hard for me to just stay in the room mentally, physically.
So it must have been hard for you, such an active person. And then comes a point where you will have to leave Yangon. What was the route that you took to leave the country?
Yeah, I didn't choose any route, you know. I just go with the flow. By the time I can't really stay in Yangon, and I contact to one of my friends, and then Gu Mamang Yi, you know. And then he told me, hey, you can go this route, and then they already got there in Maesok. So do you want to come? And then I thought about it like a week or two, and then I decided, okay, I am coming, but you know, what is the circumstances or consequences, you know, if I made this choice. And then one of the guy from KNU told my family, your life would change, totally change. But I didn't know that word, like totally. I didn't know the meaning of totally change. And then, but I took a chance. I took a chance. Okay, whatever. I go, you know, I don't know what would happen, but I can't stay here. So that is the only way that I have, you know, I have. So, okay. That's cool. Yeah. Then, you know, I have like undercover, like put some makeup, like for the skin color, you know, I put some brownish makeup on and then put some hat, like very, like thrift, work clothes, like very old clothes, like look like
I see,
like yeah, look something not really, like hiding, you know, like undercover myself, like trying to look like normal people, like normal civilians,
right.
So I wear some longi, you know, Burmese traditional dress, like a skirt, and like a shirt, yeah. Like a shirt. I never really wear like shirt and longi that old. I would say that it's not usual.
Yeah.
To like pretend like a character in a movie, you know. I didn't used to wear like glasses, but I put some glasses. This is the glasses that I use it for undercover, but now I have to like use it. I put real glass now. I put like protecting glass now. But
I see this is part of your disguise, yeah. When you were trying to escape.
Yeah. This is like my disguise. I have to disguise. Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, so it is like a movie, like a taxi driver, like Korean drama movie, like Taxi Driver. It's kind of like that. Yeah, it's basically like that. I feel like I was in a movie, you know. And I thought about it. Okay, my life could make a movie like something like that, you know. Yeah. It's very interesting. And I had to like go through like 7 gates. Like every gate you have to like put down window down. You have to like put down window. And then they will check your ID, and they will, if you are in a bad lock, and they will took out your mask or anything like that. But I was so lucky, but at the same time, you know, I might be in a trouble, because you know, in a gate like the biggest gate, like Dalian Bridge is really long, and then the checkpoint is really big. Like a lot of people, like soldiers, police, and even the administration for people from administration, like you know, something like that. They probably like 10 to 15 people at the gate, at each gate, like that gate,
right?
Really big, and they want to check everything. And so you know, we went like two car we are like 1 mile apart. If something happened, we would just change the route and everything like that. We have already planned it. The driver, they are very professional driver. They know the route really well. They go the route for like a couple of times to check already, like you know, make it for safety and everything, you know. So so the first car, the car from they check it, but they passed and they okay with that. And then and then later so we arrive at the gate. At that gate, specifically at Dalian Bridge gate, and you know, by the time we arrive at the gate, like we have to like the driver, you know, just pull the window down, and I was asleep, and then I was asleep, and then when the window down, I heard it, and then And then when I slowly opened my eyes, and the soldiers from the other side, he walked toward me. Uh-huh. With the guns and everything, you know, like the uniform, you know, the uniform is really disgusting, you know, it's like a killing uniform, because that uniform kills a lot of people, so I have trauma on it, you know, we all have a trauma on that uniform, right? And then when he came close to my car from the left side of the road, and then when the window's down, as the window down, and then as my I was slowly open my eye, and then when I opened my eye, you know, fully open, and then he was there already. So I was like, I saw him standing there, you know, like with the guns and everything, and then he trying to say something. He was trying to say something. I know he's trying to like ask me like ID and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I thought about no. If he asks mm-hmm. me first, then you know I had to get him the ID, and then if he realized the ID is a fake ID, and I'll get in trouble. So I don't know, I didn't know what to do, but I was so scared, you know, like but I took the chance. I asked him first, hey, do you want to check ID and stuff? And then he thought about it for a second. But I was so scared, you know, I asked him, because if he asked the person, then I have to give it to him. But if I asked him first, and if he say yes, I give it to him. But if he didn't say yes, nah, I don't need to like give it to him, right? And then he had a second thought, and then some car, you know, from the opposite side came in. And then luckily he said, it's okay, you can go. So I was so happy. I can't really be happy at the time, you know. I can't. Yeah. I can't be seen as a really happy person.
Yeah.
Because of he didn't check my ID and stuff. So
yeah.
After we passed the gate, I was that time, that moment, I never forget. It was the happiest moment in my life. You know, I can't imagine like going through that kind of situation, and then it became like one of the. Yeah. The happiest memory for me, you know,
yeah,
in my life. It was so terrible. Yeah.
must have been very terrifying. Sounds to me like you were trying to take control of the situation by saying, hey, do you want to see an ID?
Trying to control the situation. But yeah, I was so lucky. Yeah, I know. I thought about it. Yeah.
Were you carrying a fake ID?
The ID, yes, they give us the fake ID, you know, this is how professional they are. It looks like a really good one, you know.
Really?
Yeah, but I can't say it is fake and it's real, but I think probably they can check it, you know.
I see.
It's like 50-50, you know, if you're lucky, if you're not, then, you know.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like a movie. That's not like a scene from a movie.
It is a movie. It is a movie. Yeah. A movie is like a life journey, right? Movie is a people stories. Yeah, this is a people story. So you could make a movie.
And then you were in Maesok for a while?
Yeah. After that, I went, we arrived in Myawari, which is border to Maesok, border to Thailand. Yeah. And I was there the first time. It was the first time I met like ethnic group, which, you know, so called like the bone rebellion rebel, you know.
Right.
When I was young, I was brainwashed by the military, the ethnic group are the rebel, you know, they're bad people, they kill, they rape. They burn your houses, you know, they do whatever, you know, terrible stuff, arbitrary stuff to people. I was brainwashed, but eventually those are the people who helped me, you know, to go through all the struggles, all the difficulties, you know. So right. Yeah, that's a realization at that point for me, you know. I met them and they really like educated, you know, not like rebel like eating your eating like human flesh or everything like that. So they're not scary. They were really good people. They've been they help us, you know, they put us in their like camp, like a camp. And there is no like a window. And so we sleep on the ground. They give us some like a small blanket, a mosquito net, and they give us food for like, we didn't know that, you know, when we have to like go cross the border, we have to wait their order, and then we have to wait the situation whether it is good or not. So they have to check first. So I was there, me and my friend and group of people there like for a few days, and we always like want to go, you know, we only check with them. Whenever they come visit us, we will like ask when do we have to like possibly could, you know, cross the border. With hope and expectation and stuff like that, you know. But at first we were told like we only have to like stay a night and then we go cross the border, but we didn't. But it turned out it won't happen. It was not happen like that. It wasn't like that. So we had to stay for a week, and then out of nowhere, then they told us, and then we can go now. Let's go. So we have to pack like really quick. And I just like a backpack, and that's it, you know, for me. I didn't have anything, and just backpack, and that's it. So it's very easy for me to pack and everything and pack and go. Yeah, so we have to like go through like different gate, like they all surround each other, you know. I realized like DKBA, like BGF, and then from the military, and the KNU, DKBA, so they surround each other, like each other. The camp or the, you know, the soldier camp are like surrounded each other. Yeah,
I see.
Very interesting. So on the front seat, there was like a KNU, like one of the probably high rank soldiers, you know. He sit there, and then he showed his face, you know, whenever there was like a gate, he showed them his face, and then we pass, and then like that we pass through like 10 gates, and then we arrive at the border, and then we went across.
I see. I was thinking about something that you mentioned earlier, which is like the brainwashing of like ethnic groups, the term the bone, right? The bone could be translated into rebel, but it's almost like synonymous with like bad guys, right? Because in the movies that we've watched, like growing up, like any of like the war movies, like the military is always fighting the bad guy, and the bad guys are always the ethnic groups, you know. So we grew up watching these movies. We grew up wanting to be soldiers, basically, watching these movies and trying to fight the bad guys, and guys are the bone. And these rebels, the bones, are the one who were helping you, that, you know, helping you cross the border to safety.
Definitely. They were the good guy. And then the military, we thought they were a good guy, but they turned out they were the really bad guy. For all of us, you know.
Yeah
And then we crossed the border, and then I was there in Mestov for 7 months, and not to get a document, you know, to go to come here in the US. That time, 7 months seems like 2 or 3 years for me, you know. Because I had nothing to do. I have to like stay in the house that they provided, because if I go out and when the police officer in time And when if they saw me, and then they would put me in jail, and they might, you know, send me back to the military,
right?
To Myanmar military, to Myanmar. So there's right. a chance to for me to get into trouble. So I would stay silent. Yeah. I was there, like really. I stayed there very silent. Yeah, silently, for 7 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that must have felt like forever.
Yeah. That's right.
And did you know that you were be going to the US eventually, or at that time do you have any idea where you might be headed?
No, I don't know. I have no idea that I would be going to the US, but I always have hope. Like I hope, I always have like positive attitude on things. There's something good gonna happen, you know. For me, I just wait. But the waiting time is really, really exhausted. Like you know, you don't know what will happen, and then I don't know. It's just like. As soon as I got a mess out and someone from the RCS or RSC, I don't know, resettlement agency, you know, they call me, they call me that, you know, when they call me that, are you, where are you? And something like that. So I told them I'm here in Mesaw and I'm ready to give an interview and stuff. And then they told me they would call me back. So I was waiting there for 7 months and like for 5 months, I didn't get any reply from them. And then I called them again. And then they started redoing my document at the time.
I see.
It was like postponing my document because of some issue. And they didn't reply me on that, but I have to like call them to check what is happening with my document. Like I said, I didn't know where I were be heading to where any country, because I didn't know anything about like I could possibly go to Australia or France.
Yeah.
Or like UK or anything like that. I just want to go somewhere safe, you know.
Yeah. Was there any point while you were waiting that you felt I've made a big mistake?
Oh no. I never thought of it. Cuz you know, I thought about being like, you know, they call us, they contact us, you know, China, like they trying to contact us to make like agreement, like a contract, like you have to sign it. And then on the contract, they put all the things like you will never do the protest or, you know, anything against the military and in the future, something like that. And then what you have done is because of some people force you to do some, you know, doesn't have any good intention, bad influence, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. Force you to this kind of terrible, you know, protest or something like that. I would never do it because this is my choice, my decision that I made. This is the right decision that I made. So I would never sign up for anything because it's a lie. It would be a lie.
Right.
It would turn out to be a lie. So I would never do it. That's why I chose this path. And I think it is right path to choose. I never have the kind of thought that I regret it on things like that. I always proud of it because in the end, people are going to die. I'm going to die. And then everyone going to die. So I want to I want to say to myself, you know, I talk to myself when there is a time, you know, before I die, I want to say that you made a good choice because you stand with the justice and you stand with the people, and you made it. You took the part that the history, you know, given to you. The history gave to you. Like, yeah. I wanna die happily. You know, like I want to die happily. That's why I don't want to die regretted about it. You know, right? Yeah, I would never regret about it. No, never.
Yeah,
I love it.
It seems like now that you know you've been in the US for a couple of years now already, and seems like you have kind found some kind of stability, and I see you're online, and you know you're active again in terms of like speaking out about what's going on in Myanmar. For both local and internationally, and I see you've been traveling to you know Karenni areas. So how are you feeling more settled with your life? How are you feeling now after going through all that time of like uncertainty?
Yeah, uncertainty is not a pleasant experience that people want to experience, you know, because nothing is sure, nothing is certain, and everything is unseen, and you can't really expect anything in life. The first time I came here in the US, like I was in New York for a year, I was so lost. I didn't use my social media. One thing is I can't really use it because it locked out. I can't remember my I switched my phone and I didn't realize I need to like get the authentication like code from my old phone. So I didn't use any social media, and also like that's why I lost contact with a lot of people, like most of them. I didn't know what is happening in Myanmar, what was happening in Myanmar, like the first year in 2022. And then, you know, I have to deal with the life here in the US. Like, I didn't have a credit, you know, because I just got here in the US. I didn't have a credit to rent a place, even to rent a place. So I don't know. I don't know where to live, where to stay.
Wow.
And for God's sake, I didn't know what to do. You know, I don't know. Do I really? I thought about. Yeah, I was. What am I supposed to do? Something like that, you know. So do I like need to find a job like a server. Like a waiter, you know, like I don't know what to do. The transitional period is really harsh, like out of nowhere, you know, suddenly, like you have to like do different, you have to like go through different stage of your life. Nobody's ready for anything like that, you know. And at the time, yeah. Like not a lot of people came here. At that point, I was here alone. And I didn't know what to do. I was so depressed, but I keep training, like my workout is still going on, like I keep training every day, but mentally I was so lost. And then, yeah, I gained a lot of weight, and then my skin doesn't look good. I ate a lot of sugars because, you know, it comforted me. I didn't have any friend here in the US. And I took a job as a Taekwondo instructor in Queens, Amherst. I wrote on the Rosebud Avenue. And then the way to walk to my work is I have to like go through like a lot of Mexican like community. So it's not a community that is safe, you know. Like I would say, it's not really safe for me, you know, to go like to walk around, and then it's not the environment that I want to live, you know. It's very, I don't know. It's like people, a lot of, I see a lot of homeless living there, and it's not a pleasant things to watch and to smell or to experience, you know, every day. So it's like level of being, you know, the level of being you used to live is not the level of being that you are experiencing now. So I had to like really adjust it, and I can't really cope with the situation that I had on the first year in the US. And I took I was working there as a trainer, like taekwondo instructor for 3 months. I trained like from 5 years old kid to 64 years old ladies. And like there was like five classes in a day. So I have to stretch out. Like first I have to like stretch, like do some stretching, warm up first, and then you know, like a kick and stuff, you know, like Abchaki, you know, Yorochaki, something like that, you know, like a taekwondo kit, something like that. I taught them kits, kick, and yeah. And then later, I realized, no, this is not the one that I want to do, you know. I lost purpose, you know, when a person lost purpose, and then. When a person doesn't have any purpose, then what is the meaning of life, right? There's no meaning to it. So there's no like you want to wake up early in the morning and go for a run or anything like that. I don't have any inspiration for that, motivation for that anymore. But I still, you know, like figuring out my life. And then I started taking like certified personal training tests. I paid like $900 for it as a personal trainer. Like, you know, I studied it for 6 months, and I do like an exam for it, and I pass it. And then before I pass it, I decided to go to LA because I have some friend there, and then also I want to make movies. So I decided to move out of nowhere. And I didn't know that LA and New York is so far, like only 2,400 like miles in away, like east and west. I didn't have any idea.
Life
is like you can't really expect anything, and also you don't know what would happen, so just go with the flow, and then everything turned out better. Yeah. Rent time, I got I just got like $2,000, and I rent time, I move out to LA, and I have to like buy a car, because if you don't have a car, it looks like you don't have a leg to walk around, you know. So I had to like buy a car first. So I put down $200,000 and I got a car. With the help of like some of my friend, you know, to guarantee that I will pay, you know, I will pay like consistently, like consistently the loan and everything. And yeah, I started doing like delivery stuff, like Uber Eats and, you know, DoorDash and something like that. I drive like 10 hours a day, you know, sometimes more than 10 hours, like for a year and a half. I keep doing like consistently. Every day, I don't know what to do, so I do what I know is the best. So I make some money, and I just like, I don't know what to do, you know, like losing purpose. But I always like listen to the podcast and listen to the book while I was riding and like driving around. I do the work. So and then I live with the questions. I lift the questions, and And I don't know the answer, but I live with the question. And I keep thinking, figuring it out. And after 2 years passed and I got my green card. And then I can apply for travel documents when I'm applying it. And then I start using my social media again after 2.5 years. And you might see that, you know, all the things that I posted at the time. It was so really deep that, you know, like something from my heart. I would write it, like really take time to heal myself with my word. Not for everyone, but just for me. Because I was suffering, so I heal myself. I wrote it, you know, from the experience of from all the books and everything. You know, I wrote it. Like some people suggest me to write a book, by reading my words and my status and everything. You know,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been you know, that stretch of period where you were going through life, trying to survive, maybe trying to find purpose, and at the same time not being able to be present in the public, like, you know, it must have been quite strange for somebody who's a public figure, who's an actor also.
Right, definitely. I lost my identity. Like I don't feel like I'm an actor or celebrities anymore. I feel like I'm nobody. And that's why I lost my purpose. You know, I don't know how I'm supposed to be look like, or how am I supposed to be supposed to feel as an actor or an artist. I lost my creativity because I was working 10 hours a day, you know, delivering food door to door, you know, waiting to deliver, like waiting the food at the shop, like the restaurant.
Right.
My identity just lost. I didn't know who am I anymore, who I was, or like, you know, what is my value or purpose anymore. And then I got green card, and then I decided to go to Thailand to find my purpose. When the story came, yeah.
I see. So this was like earlier this year that you were traveling to the Karani area. Was that part of you trying to find your purpose?
That's right. Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. I was so lost that I told you, like, I was so lost and I didn't know what to do. So even I didn't know where to like donate or stuff like that. I didn't know who to trust. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what is going on and who I can trust, or who is, you know, still working for the people who are standing for the people and who are still working and consistently. So I decided to go back to Thailand to meet all my fellow actors and you know, some people from politics, you know, politician. Yeah. Yeah, I talked to them and I got some idea, and I went back to Mesol to see where to look around, where I live, where I stay before I move out to come to US. So I go back to visit, and I was there in Mesol for 10 days, and I went into Karani, KNU, like base six. There was a lot of, like, it's informal, it's a Myanmar site, so it's risky too. It's risky as well. But I took the risk to go into the Karani, the Myanmar part. Yeah, for a day. Yeah, that was for a day. And I came back and then I went to Chiang Mai to stay a few days. And then some of my friends encouraged me to do like a fan meeting. So I did a fan meeting like in Chiang Mai and also in Bangkok. I ended up like doing like two fan meetings in Thailand, which I never done it before. The first time for me, and it was very exciting, and then who's gonna come? You know, I thought about who's gonna come to my fan meeting because I haven't really done anything in 4 years, you know. So who's gonna come to our to a fan meeting of like a delivery man or you know like something like that? I love you totally lost my identity. So I just thought about me as a normal people like who deliver food. Like another identity of me, you know, something like that. So I lost my confidence of, you know, doing a fan meeting and stuff, like meeting all the people. They used to encourage me. But eventually I did it. And then it was great. I gained my identity back on those fan meetings. People came by and encouraged me and I encouraged them back. And it's sort of like, you know, I kind of experienced the identity that I used to have, like as an actor and as celebrities or as someone who is creative, you know, something like that. And then I met the clean angle, the Guzia and Matenza, and they asked me whether I want to go to visit, you know, to see what is happening in Granny. But it would take like 4 days to go to back and forth. The travel time is 4 days. So like,
right,
when you have to like go 2 days in and 2 days out. So, and then the road itself is really bad. Like there is no road, no proper road. Mm-hmm. You have like go cross whatever, like smuggle, like people use to smuggle with that route. So you have to go through that route in order to avoid all the base of the military, you know? So, okay. And I realized I just have like a few days left in my document, like a time visa. They give me like 2 months and then I have to like extend for a month. And then I go X because this is my first time, you know, using like a passport. This is not a passport. It's like a document, but it looks like a passport, but it's the color is green. So people are really curious about like, even the officer, the immigration officer really curious about, they only check, like double check, triple check the book. So whenever I got, you know, I encounter immigration right. officer, they only check my book. So I was, no, it's not so and so on, like, you know, whether I can extend my visa or not. But I went to the immigration office in Chiang Mai and then they told me, it's allowed. So I extended it. And then I decided to go to Karani. And yeah, that is the satisfactory journey of my life, you know, the best moment that I created in my life, I would say. Yeah, I saw a lot of stuff, real stuff and real people and real pain and real like sacrifice in that current.
Yeah.
Yes.
From what I'm hearing, I feel like your trip back to Thailand and meeting, you know, all these people that you've known and you've worked with, kind of like the closest to home that you have been in a while since you moved to the US, right?
Right.
And it's such an interesting decision for you to say, yes, I'm going to go see what's Karani state is like now.
Yeah.
You know, part of it is, you know, liberated from the military. So like, and as you were saying, this is one of the most, you know, interesting and life-changing kind of trip you've ever taken. What were one of the things that stood out for you in terms of like being in Karani State and how it make you feel and how it impacted you in the way you think?
Yeah, it has a huge impact on my life and on my in every perspective of me seeing the revolution and stuff. Because you know you only experience what people put out on social media. Like people they will put out their emotion and on the actual facts, you know, what is happening on the ground is not really something they will put out on the social media. They will put out all the emotion that they experience, you know, with the situation. So whatever a person said, they will, it is already include his heart perspective and feelings on it. So it's not the way you go there and experience it, you know. So I went there and I got in Karani, into Karani, and then I talked to soldiers from our site, and so-called PDF, you know, and all the soldiers, like not even PDF, like they were kind of PDF too, you know, but they were local PDF or, you know, and like ethnic group, like PDF. KNDF, you know, something like that. They all are soldiers from our site, and we talked to them. I talked to Maui, Go Maui, you know, and I talked to a lot of leaders. I talked to like refugees from Kalaw State, from the Kalaw, not state, from the Kalaw City, because they are people, displaced people, you know, from the city to the Karani. People from the south, people from the east north, because Karani is in the south of our country, southeast, right? So people from the north, they came here because it is a liberated state. Karani State is a liberated state, so they came here as a refugee, and then they don't have anything to eat actually, so people have to like I provide them food and everything, and then we went there to provide them food, and also like we talked to them, not even providing, you know, things. We really take time to talk to them, and then we hear their words and their pain, and then they told us one thing is like they thought that people just other people around the world, like Burmese and all the people like people from Myanmar. Left them alone, you know, like they feel like they were neglected or something like that. So I told them, no, you guys are not neglected or betrayed or anything like that. We are all in this together, you know. I want to deliver this message. That's why I came here, because I can come here. Not a lot of people can do it, but they want to come, but they can't really come here. It's risky. But I am here now and to talk, to deliver to the message of, you know, we are in this together. No, we're not, you're not abandoned or anything. You know, we are in this together, and we will fight until the end, you know, together, and we can do it. We can make it happen. And then we are, it's happening and in a good way. And then I talked to a lot of like people from the PDF. They lost their legs and they lost their hands, you know, they lost all their limbs. And some people, you know, got a hole here, like their head is not, they scar, you know, the left side of their scars. They lost their head, the scars and everything, you know, it's like
part of their head is missing.
It's missing. It's really. Wow. But you know, some people can't talk anymore because their brain got injury. And some people still can talk even without the head, the part of head. So it's like something is missing here, you know? Yeah. The scar is missing. So you can just see there is something. I don't know. I don't know how to express it, but yeah.
It must be jarring. It must be quite jarring to see that.
That's right. So yeah, and then people, some PDF who lost their legs, one leg, right, because of the landing the mine, the landmine, and they told me we were still fighting and we are waiting for another like a leg, you know, like I don't know what how to put it, but yeah, they're waiting for another leg, and then they're waiting for it. Why?
They're waiting for the prosthetic leg.
So
that they can go back and fight.
Yeah, they can go back and fight. This is how they were like dedicated, you know, to the revolution. So we have all the limbs, you know. Should we stop, right? Why should we stop? We must carry on what we are doing. So I found my purpose. That's why, you know, whatever I do, if I, you know, lost my purpose in anything, there's some feeling, like some sad feeling or depressed feeling, whenever that feeling encounter me, I'll think about oh, those guys are fighting for us without a leg, or you know, missing a leg. But what we're doing, we have to like keep doing what we are doing right now, you know, whatever, we have to keep doing it, because we yeah. can't waste their sacrifice, you know.
Yeah
It was really a remarkable trip, yeah, for me.
So you saw the sacrifices that were being made in the front line with your own eyes.
Yeah, my own eyes, and through words that they talked to me. Actually, they're not really suffering, you know, from that. Actually, they're really strong. Even though they lost their friend, they lost their boyfriend, girlfriend, and their family, they're really strong. They're not like sad all the time. They're not depressed like all the time. They are happy and they're enjoying what they have done and what they are doing. So, we it's not like a sad story all the time, like they put it
right,
like people put out on social media. They're you know, they're good and bad all the time, you know, in everything.
Did you find a sense of hope for the country when you were there?
I felt like that's why, you know, I got so energetic and I found my purpose, because I found hope. We want democracy because we want something to change, right? We desire a change for the good, for the good of the people, and we a change to have a right for everyone, and equality, you know, and the basic human rights, you know. And then for every change, like educational, like health, and like the whole system, a change. The whole system means everything included, like education and health and administration, or everything, right? Like the mindset of the people, even the mindset of the soldiers, the mindset of the leaders, you know, like people who has weapons, right? So basically for a change. A change in everything. So I saw the change, like a change in educational system. Like we have a currently college, like currently a medical college, in which you don't need to get like a high score for it. You just have to pass like 11th grade, and then you can test it out. If you really want to like get into medical field, you will have to test. Like go to any college, you can choose, you can make a choice in any college, you can go and get an exam and then they probably have three steps to get into without the mark and everything. You know, you don't need to like to reach certain marks, because before it's normal education, you have to like reach even though you are really interested in medical field, you have to get, you know, certain marked to get into the medical field. But now it's changing.
Yeah.
You need the passion. You only need passion, and you only need something like that, and to get into the medical field. So it's changing, and then young kids they were taught like social science and political science, you know, on that young age. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after we won like a democracy, and then we have to like keep, you know, consistently keeping the system like operated like well. In order to get well, you know, to maintain the system, you have to know what is democracy really is, you know, what democracy really is, what is the right of the people, you know, what is what the military is supposed to be doing, or what the government is supposed to be doing to the people, you know. So if you don't know anything about it, you can't really say or change anything or keep maintain or the system, right? Okay. So they got young kids are taught in a way of the about the system and everything. They were really, you know, the education going on, the education, I see the hope in education, and I see the hope the future generation and the future of our country, because the education changed the mindset, and mindset could change the whole thing, you know, the whole game. And
right,
and then the soldiers, you know, let's say the soldiers from our side, the PDF, they are really like, they give a service, you know. There's no like a dictator, like they will force you to do whatever they want you to do. They are in the service of your request, something like that, you know. I feel like they protect me, you know, they protect us, you know. And then even though, you know, they were carrying weapons and stuff, they were really humble, down to earth. Talk to you, you know, they were actually really politely, because they're carrying a weapon, so they have to like double, they have to like make sure they're polite, and then they were really polite. Yeah. And I really love them, talking to them and out with them. I even like buying them some drinks. And then you know, in order to drink like a beer, and they have to like put all the badge and from their uniform, right? It's really lovely to put out the badges in their uniform, and we drink beers, and, you know, and we play music and we sing together. Like, yeah, that was really fun, you know. I never thought of like hanging out with them, you know, like in a jungle and like in the midst of a war, like civil war. That was really a fantastic, like remarkable experience for me, you know. I'll never forget. Yeah
And like when you were saying how humble and how polite the soldiers are, like, it seems like it's an experience that we have never had, right? Growing up in this country.
I know, right?
We always, like, when we see a soldier, we just, like, go the other route, you know?
Yeah. We can never, like, face-to-face, like, talking to the soldiers, because they always want our money, or they will, you know, fear us, you know? They will put us in, you know, in a dangerous situation, or give us any trouble. Something like that. We never thought of like they will give us, they will help us, you know, in any way that we need. Yeah. So this is a change. This is a hope. So
yeah. I'm glad to hear that, and I hear that you've made a documentary of your trip there.
That's right.
Now you are screening that in the US. How has it like being received by people who see the film?
Yeah, I got.
And how is it making your first documentary, by the way?
Yeah, this is my first documentary for 4.5 years, and I always wanted to do like my biography like documentary stuff, but this is like out of nowhere. Yeah, I didn't expect to record and everything, but one of my team who helped me out to do the fan meeting, and then they came with me together, so we went there into Kearney, 4 people. So one of them, a girl, she's really, you know, you never imagine that the little tiny little petite girl, she would like make this kind of documentary, you know, film by herself, and she would record everything, you know. So she followed us, and whatever we talked to them, we talked to the villagers and the refugees, and we just recorded. I didn't have a plan to like put out, but she has a plan. She has a plan, and she just recorded everything, and she asked me questions. She used to be a journalist, you know, like an interviewer. She knows me for, we know each other from the interview, like when I was filming, like being an actor back in 2017, 18. And I noticed her because she worked in MC, like Myanmar Celebrity. But now it's not ethically, you know, it's not ethically, it's not a good media, you know, right, per se.
Right.
But it used to be good. Like watchable, I would say. Yeah, ethically. So yeah, and then I noticed her, and then she just asked me a question, you know, how I feel whenever we encounter like refugees or any places, because I was there in Kearney for 11 days, like day one, you know, we went to
right,
like a camp. And day two, we went to like maybe a base of soldiers, like, you know, Dimaso soldiers and something like that. And sometime we went to some places scenery, like a traditional houses, or like mountains. Like we went out to see the sceneries of Kearney State, which is really beautiful. So whenever we go there, like we recorded like day one, how do you feel? And at the end of the day, he asks that question, like, how do you feel? How people, you know, make you feel? And we recorded, and I talked to her, and she recorded, and I felt this, I felt that. And then it turned out we can make a documentary. And so we put it together, and then it came out as a documentary. And then we raised, we sell like 2,000, close to 2,000 tickets, and we made an open donation too as well. So one ticket is $15. So we make it like 20K, like over $20K. So it's closely to, we raised a lot of money from it, and then we didn't even expect it to make like a documentary. But yeah, and then I got a lot of feedback from people who watched it, even from like UN ambassador Ujong Motong, and his family really love it, and then he donated like $300 for us. That was really good, and then even Kujaba is interested in, and a lot of like Mapipi Jordan give us a very good review on it. Mapipi Jordan is really like famous singer, composer, right, in our country. And I think she's the top singer in our country, I would say. We're given a lot of good reviews, feedback, and you know, whatever they talk, it's like mostly after they watch it, they told me they felt that they want, you know, they felt like they were there, like they were there in Kerani, like
right
with me, with us, like together. Feeling they were there, and they felt the pain, and they felt the hope. They received all the things that we experienced. So yeah, this is the purpose of making this documentary, because I wanna give them the raw footage, the raw feeling of what is happening, not the social media, like not the layer with your emotion, you know. Not some filter with your emotion. Something that is your what is really happening on the ground. Yeah,
that sounds incredible. And you know, to be able to not just experience something so real, something so close to home,
yes,
but also be able to share it with the people who are like you, who cannot go home in the foreseeable future. That must be quite special.
It was really special. Like I said, very remarkable journey for me. I'm so, you know, so happy. I don't know what words can express this feeling. You know, I was so satisfied with my life, with my choice that I made after the coup.
And that must have been like the closest to home that you've been in a while. And I imagine like the Kerani state is somewhere, if not for the coup, it's not a place that you think about visiting.
I always wanted to visit Kerani, Gaya State, though. You know, there's a name of Gaya State too. Kerani is just Gaya State, they call it. I like sausage, like the Gaya sausage.
Gaya sausage, yeah.
Yeah. And then I like the Kongyi. The Kongyi is like alcoholic beverage, you know, is created from corn, like really hard corn for specifically for the fermented. You have to like go through fermentation stuff in order to make the beverage. It's very healthy, and people there, they drink it all the time. And then, you know, like very organic stuff. I would really, you know, want to bring it here, you know, to sell in the U.S. that shit is really good, and it's, you know, and it's good for digestion, and it's good for your sleep. It's all good, you know, good for health, a lot of like food culture. They're rich, you know. They have a rich cultures and the view of the Kerani, the Kaya State is really beautiful. It's surrounded by mountains, like my hometown, but it is better than my hometown. Actually, I would say I love Mogo, you know, because Mogo has a lot of mountains, but beautiful mountains. But when you compare to Kaya State, you know, you can't compare to Kaya State, like Kerani State. It has a lot of mountains better than my hometown. I admit it, and I felt like home because a lot of people are talking in Burmese, which, you know, I didn't have experience here in the U.S. Not a lot of people are talking in Burmese, so I felt like home. That is really like heartwarming, like experience. Then I felt it in after the coup, after 3.5 years,
and speaking to you, and I understand like health is a really big part of your life. You're always still active. I've seen your YouTube videos. You eat very healthy, You cook with this auntie.
Yeah.
Is she related to you? How are you related?
Yeah, she's my landlord here.
Yeah. And you guys cook and talk and have a nice conversation and, you know.
Yeah, because I'm so bored, you know, I don't know what to do. I just like put a camera and then you want to talk and then just talk. Let's talk, you know, because I always want to, I open my mind all the time to learn, you know, from, especially from people who are older, and because they have all the experiences, you know, life experiences, I might end up, you know, getting some ideas of, you know, how to cope, how to live my life, you know, fulfill, you know, get the fulfilled life. I always love to talk to the old people, you know. Yeah, this is what it's.
Yeah, I watch some of those videos, and in these videos, you will see Kara like cooking with this older lady, and then they have a conversation about food or, you know, things about maybe the past and her sharing her experience. Those are very kind of like heartwarming videos. Because I didn't know, I was like, oh, maybe this is Kara's mother. That's what I thought. But no.
Right. Yeah. She's like my mom. Yeah. She's like my mom, home away from home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt so I'm lucky to have a mom here, you know, because I don't know, I haven't really seen my mom, my actual mom, for a long time. So, yeah, but whenever I go, I met a lot of good people. I don't know, because the energy that I put out there is the energy that I'm receiving right now. So it's very good energy. I think because of that, like because of I put out the good energy and I receive good energy. I always believe that.
Yeah. Definitely see how heartwarming your interaction is, and I get the sense that this is, like you said, your home away from home. And you know, you have given us so much time today to talk about everything that you've gone through in the past couple of years, since the coup, even the time before the coup. And I wanted to know, you know, since you've been away from home, like, what does home means to you, and how do you bring home to your life when, you know, you have to live in a situation where you can't come back to Myanmar for a while?
I think the meaning of home is like where you can sleep peacefully, you know, where you can sleep peacefully, where you can like enjoy your meal with the people you love. Nothing special, just you can relax your mind. You know, there is no chasing, there is no like danger, anxiety, something like that. There's no you have to like the feeling of hassle, like, you know, you have to like run or like hide or anything like that. Home for me is like you can just be you peacefully. Yeah.
Right. let me ask you this one question to kind of wrap up everything is, you know, where do you go from here? What's next for Kaya in the coming years?
I think I'll live my life venturously, and I'll experience everything as possible, as much as possible. And I'll do whatever I love to do, which is acting and making movies. So in the future, you guys will see me, probably hopefully on screen in the US. I will try my, I decided to do it, you know, I did it before, and then I'll do it now. I'll do it again. I'll make it happen again in the US. And I will I will be a better person, like better than yesterday, and I will keep supporting the movement, the movement of democracy and freedom in our country, and I'll fight until the end, and I'll be in this movement of change, like changing in a good way of people, like to get better, to have an open mindset, to have a better education, to have a better health in our country. So I'll be in part of this change.
Glad to hear it. Thank you so much for being very generous with your time here. And we wish you all the luck for everything that you do in the future.
My pleasure. And I'm so happy finally talk to you. Yeah, thank you so much for listening. And all the people that are listening right now, I hope you have a really good life, you know, peaceful life, happy life. And please support what is happening in Myanmar and the people. We all are human being, and then we all want to live a happy and peaceful life. You know, nobody deserves a life that is in danger, like a life under airstrikes or in any arbitrary attack by the military itself. Nobody deserves that kind of tragedy. Not any human being. So please use your liberty to promote ours, like a quote by Aung San Suu Kyi, our leader. So thank you, guys. Thank you all very much for listening.
Come to the conclusion of today's episode, and as the conversation you've just heard underscores, the humanitarian situation in Myanmar is dire and demands immediate attention. For millions of people, the struggle for survival is an everyday reality, and the need for urgent humanitarian aid cannot be overstated. Through this platform, we aim to raise awareness and keep the focus on these critical issues. But awareness must lead to action. And this is the point where you can come in to make a real difference. By supporting the nonprofit mission of Better Burma, you'll be contributing to our wider effort to bring hope and relief to those who need it most. Your donation can go towards providing much-needed support to vulnerable communities across Myanmar and along the border that continue to be impacted by the military coup. Visit betterburma.org/donation to join this effort. Yarananda, Yarananga, Yaranayada, Yaranampoda, Yaranamano.